All right, let's jump into another deep dive. This time we're heading back to the book of Genesis.
Back at Genesis.
Yeah, chapters 37 and 38 specifically, the story of Joseph and his brothers. We're using excerpts from lectures by Dr. Kenneth Matthews as our source material.
Okay.
And what's really interesting about these chapters is how much they pack in. We've got family drama,
Oh, yeah.
jealousy, deception, and we even get a glimpse into the line of the future kings of Israel.
It's pretty amazing, right? I mean, the narrative just pulls you right in.
Oh,
It
yeah.
starts with this phrase, these are the generations of. And Dr. Matthews points out that it's not just like filler, it's like, hey, pay attention. This is who matters now.
Yeah.
In this case, it's a spotlight right on Jacob and all the drama.
Oh, for sure. It feels like a warning almost. Like,
Yeah.
okay, get ready. Things are about to get
Yeah, duck luck.
messy. Exactly. Especially when we start talking about Joseph himself.
Right.
I mean, Dr. Matthews actually suggests that Joseph might be, well, a bit more complicated.
Than the traditional ideal man of faith. What do you think about that?
Well, the text gives us some clues, right? Even as a young man, Joseph seems to have a knack for, rubbing his brothers the wrong way. And of
Right.
course, being Jacob's favorite
Oh,
and
yeah.
getting that incredible ornamented robe, that probably didn't help much.
Oh, definitely not. That kind of favoritism can breed resentment, even in the most loving families. I mean,
Absolutely.
and the robe itself is almost like this symbol, this outward sign of Jacob's preference,
Totally.
which just adds fuel to the fire. And then you add in Joseph's dreams, which are anything but subtle.
Yeah, those dreams are vivid.
Oh, incredibly vivid.
Sheaves of grain bowing down to him, and then the sun, the moon, 11 stars, all doing the same.
Hey, come
That's
on.
like, hello. It's pretty clear those are meant to be prophetic, right? And back then, dreams were considered like one of the main ways God communicated. So these
Yeah.
visions, oh, they would have been taken very seriously, no doubt. So Joseph's basically broadcasting that he's going to rule over his whole family.
Pretty much.
Can't imagine they were thrilled about that. And what's striking is how quickly that resentment turns into a plot against him.
Yeah.
They move from Hebron to Shechem, and their plan, oh, it gets dark.
That shift in location is interesting, isn't it? It's like almost a physical manifestation of them going down this darker path. And Reuben, the eldest, he tries to intervene.
Okay.
He comes up with a slightly less murderous plan,
Okay.
tossing Joseph in a dry well instead of killing him outright.
Right.
But it just shows how deep their anger goes.
Exactly. And then there's that whole deception with the robe.
Oh, the
The
robe.
symbol of Jacob's favoritism becomes the tool they use to break his heart.
It's brutal.
They stain it with animal blood, make him think Joseph's been killed by a wild animal. It's just
Awful.
awful. And this sets the stage for the next betrayal, selling Joseph into slavery.
And the traders, they're identified as both Ishmaelites and Midianites, which is
Oh,
fascinating.
so.
It underscores the complexity of this moment, right? They're descendants of Abraham, too.
Oh, what?
Just like Jacob, they're connected through that whole ancient family tree.
It's almost like the consequences of Abraham's choices.
Yeah.
The tension between Isaac and Ishmael are still playing out generations later.
Yeah, makes you think.
Yeah.
And so Joseph disappears south towards Egypt, bought by Potiphar. We're left with this feeling of
Uncertainty. Yeah.
uncertainty. His fate is hanging in the balance. The brothers are carrying the weight of their secret.
But before we follow Joseph to Egypt, the narrative takes a detour, chapter 38.
Okay.
Which seems random at first,
Yeah.
but it's actually really important.
It really is. Dr. Matthews argues that this story about Judah, tucked right in the middle of everything else, is crucial to understanding the themes of the whole book.
Wow.
It even foreshadows things related to the future kingship of Israel. We see Judah making choices, much like his brothers with Joseph,
Yeah.
that lead him down a morally complicated path. He leaves his family, marries a Canaanite woman, which is not what they usually do, and then he faces tragedy when his first two sons die.
It's like this chapter is really highlighting how human it is to make mistakes,
Right.
even when you're in a covenant with God. And then we get the levirate marriage custom.
Right, a custom designed to protect widows and make sure family lines continue. But even that gets tangled up in Judah's story.
It does seem like a well-intentioned practice gone wrong.
It does. And through it, we meet Tamar, Judah's daughter-in-law. And she is not a passive character.
I'm sensing some strong female energy here.
Oh, absolutely. When Judah doesn't fulfill his duty to her, she takes charge, orchestrates this situation
Wow.
that forces him to face his own hypocrisy and admit that she's in the right.
It's like a hidden power struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tamar, who's often overlooked,
yeah.
shows how much agency and cunning she has in a patriarchal society. And then, of course, her twin sons are born, Perez and Zira.
Their birth is wild. The text describes this struggle to emerge first. Who is the true firstborn? It echoes Jacob and Esau, right? Twins battling for the top spot. But what's fascinating is that Perez, the one who broke forth, becomes a direct ancestor of King David.
Oh, wow. So even in this seemingly side story, we see the seeds of kingship being planted, connected to a story of deception and redemption.
This
is getting good. What does all this tell us about the big picture of Genesis? What should our listeners be paying attention to?
I think it's important to remember that these aren't just historical accounts. They're carefully crafted narratives, you know.
Okay.
They reveal something about human nature, God's plan, and how those two things interact. We see family dynamics, ambition, betrayal, and ultimately forgiveness and redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And woven through it all, there's this sense of a bigger plan unfolding.
A plan we can't always see right away.
Exactly.
So much to think about already.
Oh, yeah.
And we've only just begun. Stay tuned as we keep going with the story of Joseph and his brothers and explore the themes of exile, power, and the unbreakable bonds of family.
Sounds good.
Last time, we left Joseph on his way to Egypt, sold into slavery by his own brothers. And now it feels like we're stepping into a whole new world. Pharaohs, pyramids, a whole new set of challenges for Joseph.
It's a big shift, that's for sure. And his fortunes change too, right? He goes from favored son in a wealthy household to a slave in a foreign land.
It's a huge fall from grace.
It is. But even then, we see those qualities that made him, well, both loved and resented by his family. His intelligence, charisma, he gets things done.
It's almost like he's meant for greatness, even if the path there is pretty rough. He ends up with Potiphar, a high-ranking Egyptian official.
Right.
And he rises in the ranks pretty quickly,
yeah.
Shows he's capable, trustworthy. It makes you wonder, where does that come from? His faith, his determination.
It's interesting, right? Dr. Matthews talks about how Joseph has this strong work ethic, a keen mind, and maybe even a sense of, you know, being guided by something bigger. But this rise in Potiphar's house, it comes with complications. And this part of the story, it's sadly not all that unfamiliar.
Oh, no. Here we go. Potiphar's wife, she becomes fixated on Joseph, tries to seduce him, but he refuses. It's that classic tale of temptation and integrity.
It is. And a lot of people see Joseph's refusal as proof of his piety, his moral strength.
Right. But do you think it's more than that?
I think so.
Yeah.
It also shows he understands consequences, the power dynamics.
Yeah.
You know, what would happen if he gave in, not just to him, but to Potiphar, the whole household. It would be a disaster.
So it's not just resisting temptation. It's navigating a tricky situation with, like, wisdom and foresight.
Exactly.
But that wisdom, it doesn't save him from what happens next. Potiphar's wife, she's enraged. She accuses him of assault. And Joseph, well, he ends up in prison. Unjustly.
It's tough, right? Mm-hmm. Even the most righteous can become victims, especially when someone powerful is angry and wants revenge. It's a classic power play.
And for Joseph, talk about a reversal of fortune. He's building a life and boom, back to square one. Prison. Uncertain future. But as we've seen, Joseph doesn't give up easily.
That's for sure. Even in prison, he shines. Still trustworthy, still a leader, he ends up gaining the favor of the warden.
It's like he can't help but make a positive impact, no matter where he is.
Exactly. And that leads to a crucial moment. Two of Pharaoh's officials, the cupbearer and the baker, are also imprisoned with Joseph.
Okay.
And they're both having troubling dreams. Remember, back then, dreams were like messages from the divine. They had weight.
It's like those prophetic dreams are back, always marking a turning point.
Right. And Joseph, with his gift, steps in, interprets the cupbearer's dream, predicts he'll be released back in good standing. And the baker's dream, well, not so good. Foreshadows his execution.
So Joseph's gift becomes a lifeline for the cupbearer, gives him hope when he's desperate. You'd think that connection would get Joseph out of prison, right?
Sure did. He even asks the cupbearer to remember him. But once he's back in power, well, the cupbearer forgets.
Oh, no.
It's classic, isn't it? Human promises. Gratitude gets overshadowed by self-preservation and power. It's easy to forget when things are good.
It's heartbreaking. Joseph is stuck for 2 more years. His hopes dwindling. Did he ever question why this was happening to him? If God had abandoned him?
It's a question we all ask sometimes, right? When things are tough, unfair. And the narrative doesn't shy away from that. It acknowledges the silence, the waiting, the injustice.
Yeah.
But it reminds us that even in darkness, things can change.
And they do.
They do. Pharaoh starts having these troubling dreams, and no one can interpret them.
Not a single advisor.
Nope. It's like the stage is being set for Joseph, and then the cupbearer remembers.
Maybe a guilty conscience or fate intervening.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But he remembers Joseph and his gift. Pharaoh is desperate for answers. He summons Joseph.
Finally, some good news for Joseph.
Right. And Joseph, with divine inspiration, interprets the dreams. 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. But he doesn't just interpret. He offers solutions, a plan for Egypt to prepare.
So it's not just about understanding the dreams. It's about using that knowledge to help others, even after everything he's been through.
Exactly. And Pharaoh, well, he sees Joseph's wisdom. He puts him in charge of preparing Egypt for the famine, second in command. Talk about a meteoric rise.
From prisoner to vizier. Wow.
It's a reminder that leadership can appear anywhere. And true power is about seeing beyond the present, planning for the future.
And this new position, it sets the stage for that reunion with his brothers. They come to Egypt for help, totally unaware of who they're dealing with.
The irony is thick, right? What must have been going through Joseph's mind? Anger. A thirst for revenge. Or maybe a hope for reconciliation.
That's what we'll explore next time. Forgiveness, family, and how past wounds can shape our choices. We left off with Joseph, now this powerful vizier of Egypt, ready to meet his brothers again. They come to Egypt looking for help because of the famine. No idea they're about to face the very person they betrayed.
Oh, the tension is palpable. The brothers arrive, they bow low before the vizier. Just like those dreams Joseph had way back when.
It's like poetic justice or something.
Exactly. They're totally at his mercy. You'd think this would be it, right? Mm. The big reveal. Joseph exposes them. Let's loose all that anger.
Right, right.
But he doesn't. Maybe because of all he's suffered, he goes a different route. He tests them.
Tests them?
Yeah, accuses them of being spies, throws them in prison, even holds one hostage. All the while, he's watching, listening. Does he see any remorse? Any sign they've changed?
It's like a psychological drama within this ancient story.
It is. The brothers are freaking out, feeling guilty, their past haunting them.
Oh, for sure. And they're worried about Benjamin, the youngest. Jacob finally let him come to Egypt.
Right. They know how devastated he was when he thought Joseph was dead.
Yeah.
They don't want to go through that again.
Then things get even more intense. Joseph demands Benjamin be brought to Egypt. It brings back all those painful memories for the brothers.
It forces them to face what they did, the lasting impact. And then Judah steps up. He was the one who first suggested selling Joseph.
Mm.
But now he offers himself as a slave in Benjamin's place. He wants to protect his younger brother, save his father from more pain. It's powerful.
It is. It shows how much Judah's changed. That integrity, that leadership we saw hints of before, it's coming through now. And this selfless act, it breaks Joseph.
It does. He can't hide anymore. The tears, the shock, all those bottled up emotions come pouring out.
What a scene that must have been. But even then, Joseph chooses forgiveness.
He tells his brothers he holds no grudge. What you meant for evil, God meant for good, he says. It's a powerful line, isn't it?
So powerful. A reminder that even in the worst times, there can be a bigger plan. And it doesn't stop there. Joseph brings his whole family to Egypt, gives them land, takes care of them during the famine.
So a story that started with betrayal and separation ends with reconciliation and provision. The family, broken by jealousy and lies, comes back together. Their mistakes lead them to safety and abundance.
This has been a journey, hasn't it? We've seen how human beings mess up, the tangled web of family, the incredible power of forgiveness, and how God works through all of it. What do you hope people take away from Joseph's story?
I think it reminds us that hope never dies, even when things seem impossible. Joseph shows us that going through hard times can make you stronger. Suffering can lead to good things. And even the most broken relationships can heal.
It also makes you think about the bigger picture, right? Like Joseph, we can trust that there's a plan, even when we don't understand. Our struggles, our betrayals, they can be chances to learn, to grow, to change for the better.
And maybe most importantly, it shows the importance of forgiveness. Joseph forgiving his brothers, it wasn't just for him. It was for his whole family. Letting go of anger and resentment can be so powerful, so healing. It makes you think about how we can show that same grace to others. Forgiveness isn't about forgetting what happened. It's about letting go of the bitterness, making space for reconciliation and healing.
It's such a powerful message. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the story of Joseph. Keep exploring this amazing story. There's always more to discover. We hope it inspires you to find hope and resilience in your own life.